And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Great to have you all here with us today. Henrik back again with Red Eyes TV. And we are going to continue our coverage about the insane policies of the Swedish government to investigate and potentially, possibly, come with proposals to ban or set up legislation against the Old Norse runes. We have certain symbols that are on the chopping block, effectively. The Odal rune, the Thor's hammer, and also the Tyr symbol. I think there's one more. I can pull them all up here. They're just taking them all, essentially. But what we're looking at here, of course, as we've talked about in previous shows, and it's important to go over this again and again, folks, because you know, this is what the mainstream does. They cover something over and over again. We have to make sure that we get this message out so people understand the severity of it and the just insanity of it as well on top of it. The audacity of the Swedish government to actually go in this direction. And so what I want to do is bring in a guest we have joining us today, a guest we had with us before on the show, Phil, who's joining us from the UK, who, of course, is behind Mimis Brunner, which we did a really good show with here just a couple of weeks ago now about the Kimbri and a lot of other things as well. So, Phil, thank you again for coming back on the show, and thank you for joining us talking about this important topic here today.
No, thank you for having me, Henrik. It's great to be here.
You bet. So let's just kind of go over this a little bit and talk about some of the things that's come out here then in the last couple of days. I saw a couple of stories initially, of course, from Swedish websites. I covered it pretty early on. I did a video about it because I thought it was very important due to the fact that there this transgression by the Swedish government of doing this discrimination, obviously, of people of a certain religious set of beliefs. Native European spirituality, whatever people are comfortable calling it, paganism, you know, Norse religion, whatever, you know, works for you guys. This is what they're doing now, and they're doing an investigation now, and on May 31st, they are going to basically come out with kind of a final, I guess, report on this, essentially. One of the Swedish Democrats, Björn Roos, what was his last name? I'll pull it up here. But Björn is a Social Democrat. He's looking into this. And now so we might get an answer here finally in just a few days. What was your take on this, Phil, and how do you view some a move like this?
Well, I got a few mails the night that you did your video. And then the first video I watched was actually the video from Red Eyes, because when I looked it up, it was the first thing that came up. And it was a... I was quite taken aback. I mean, I had a few reservations of the implications, as in, and I wrote an article pretty much straight away, and I had a few reservations of how far they would be able to take this. But, and then there was a lot of people in comments and message boards going, you know, it's only for the far right, right? No, you've misread it. I actually put that in my article, and actually that was the main point of my article, because where does it end with that? You know, we had all these groups coming out. Oh, no, it's only for far right. I think it, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it was to do with Nordfront mostly. They seem to be targeting this out, and the tier rune specifically. But to me, and as you'll know from covering these subjects a lot, this is a long line of things that have happened. It's not just come out of the blue. We had the Viking football team from Iceland, just because they had a little Viking video, I believe that you
read an article. We did cover that. It's amazing. And of course, again, it was like, you know, team spirits, kind of focusing on something which anchors them to anchors us, I guess, collectively as Scandinavians and Northern Europeans to, you know, a cultural heritage that we kind of all share. And that was turning to some kind of, it's a white power, you know, kind of angle to this, which is just amazing, you know.
I think I looked at one article and it said it was chauvinistic Aryan imagery. whatever that means.
But... Oh, man, let me play that in the background here while we talk about this. It was a very short one, right? Really short one. And it's like, again, you know, for a team spirit and like kind of, you know, pump you up and feel that there's something which is essentially bigger than, it's just football, sure, but it's something that's bigger than yourself, right? And that's the important thing here.
And it's their own, it's their heritage. And something that Mimisbrunn is all about, and I know that Red Ice are keen to promote as well, is our history is us. I mean, we have to understand this. So any attack on our history or any reservations put on it, you're not allowed to do something or not allowed to use this, is a direct attack on us as a people. Because without our history, we're aimless, right? We got born, we got born in this multi-racial, multi-company, just big corporate world where we're just aimless souls that they can prey on, right? We're just empty, void. Our history is us, and this is an exceptionally important thing to mention. So for the Icelandic team to be proud of their historic identity as Vikings is fine, especially in something like football, like you say, where you're trying to build up a feeling of unity, right? So the Icelandic people stand together in their Viking history and bring it forward into modern football. So to attack this, I mean, this is, in many ways, sports are seen, for good or bad, seen as kind of ways that we can express our nationality and our pride in our nations in a safe environment, right, where we're not murdering each other, you know what I mean, in some war. So I just thought that was, that was a bizarre story, but it links to the modern rune story, because it's, again, an attack on our heritage, and it's something that has been continually happening. I mean, another story to come out of Scandinavia was the Norwegian Olympic team, or I believe it was the ski team specifically.
Yeah, the ski team. Same thing there, really, the iconography. And they were, again, they were actually directly using the Tur rune, which, of course, the Nordic Resistance
yes.
movement does. And then, so it's an immediate guilt by association, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, some of the quotes in an article I looked up from the New York Times, I mean, they obviously link the Tur rune to the neo-Nazis. There's also... I found one comment really funny, and this was just to show you how far that go with just the silliness of it sometimes. Here's a quote directly from the article. A published author on Norwegian knitting, Miss Finseth, said she did not want to give knitting ideas to white supremacists. Our greatest fear was that in the next big demonstration, everyone would appear in the ski team sweater. I mean, they don't want to give knitting ideas to these racists, right? So they're all wearing nice sweaters. I mean, I just thought that was kind of funny. But
wow.
But yeah, that was
just
a bit of
wow. Yeah. But that's what we're dealing with, Phil. You know, this level of hysteria, really, total insanity and hysteria. But, you know, at the same time, I've pointed out this many times, but of course, we don't see this other level of attack on cultural heritage, or the cultural heritage of other nations. The Egyptians
quite
are not
the
banning
opposite.
Hieroglyphs or, you know, cuneiform in Babylonia or something like that. Exactly. Quite the opposite, as you say.
Especially in our own nations. I mean, in a town I lived in not long ago, there was a day for the heritage of the town, and people were cooking like Indian meals, etc. And somebody just brought up, well, that's not very local. That's not very, it's not really our history. And they got berated with attacks of being. So once you, even if you bring up that this is not actually part of your culture, you're attacked and you're a racist, you're far right, you're whatever they want to label you. And the downplaying of something like this, so people go, there's not much going to happen. It's all to do about nothing. And come whatever the date is you said, I believe May the 31st, did you say?
Or, yes, that's correct.
Nothing can really happen and it all disappear. But this is the danger of playing something like this down, is that we allow them, like you said, to keep applying this slowly but surely guilt by association. And they do it very slowly. We know how they operate. You know, the swastika being a prime example of this. The same people now that say, oh, well, you know, it's just those neo-Nazis, far right, and it's just those that we want to ban from using it. What happens, what they're doing is that they're linking this symbol to far right views or whatever they want to deem as extremists. So eventually these groups that don't want to be seen as extremists will stop using it, just like they have the swastika. The swastika is an ancient European symbol. I did an article about the origin of the swastika. It's found in Eastern Europe first. That is the oldest by far. The second oldest is Eastern Europe. The third oldest is Eastern Europe. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. It comes from India. It comes from wherever. It comes from Europe. It is a European symbol. And would these same heathen groups now that say, oh, no, it's just right wing, would they fly the swastika? I bet they wouldn't. And in some countries, they'd probably get arrested for it.
Yeah.
And it's the same process. Whatever you think of the swastika, whatever you think of the National Socialist use of the swastika, that's not important. If you won't fly it because you're fearful of what other people will think, then that is exactly what we're talking about here with the tear rune. Yeah, with the, it was slowly become unused. It was slowly be hidden away and become a symbol of shame, right? Like the swastika is for many people. They don't want to use it.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, it's kind of, and I mean, I'm thinking from their perspective too, which makes this interesting because in other situations where they, you know, want to ban something or whatever, then they're very adamant about, no, take it back. Don't let whatever negative association that they have to the group using it, they fight very, very hard to actually regain it and take it back kind of thing. They don't say, ban it, don't use it kind of thing. So it's only, again, when it comes to our heritage, and especially Northern Europeans and the pre-Christian one, the native spirituality of the Northern people, that they attack and say, ah, that's fine. And also one more thing, Phil, I think it's important there, is if you take away one of the hard edges of one side, if you will, that is considered culturally to be extreme, then when you've effectively have censored that, you have opened up to basically saying that the next thing that was now closest to the thing getting banned, that's going to be the new extremism. And that is a justification for removing that, et cetera, et cetera. And on we go. And where does it end? As you said.
Exactly. And this is the same for groups as well. Even groups that have come out trying to downplay this. When does somebody decide that they're far right? Because, I mean, what is the legal definition of far right? I don't know what it is. Extreme right wing. We hear all these terms thrown around, but there's no legal definition. If you read a more left wing paper, the conservatives in my country, the UK, are far right. They're anything but far right, but, a left wing paper would deem them as far right. So who gets to decide what is far right? And how do the Swedish government then legally implement anybody that's far right? Can it use the symbol? How are they going to legally define that? I mean, it's absurd, but like I say, it's part of the demonization process. And anybody that's in Nordfront that is of Swedish origin, Swedish birth, Swedish heritage, you can't take away their history and say you're not allowed to use a powerful historic symbol of your people. That has to be against some kind of law, the freedom of religion, etc.
Religion,
et cetera.
That's just it. We have religious freedom still, but in this case, it doesn't work. And I think they'll do a spin on this. I think they'll do something like, well, okay, we're not going to ban everything outright. We know we can't do that.
Yeah.
It's going to be in the context that you're using it, right? So it's going to be, I think you said that too. It's like, well, you know, we have to look at case by case situation and then. But as usual, it's kind of like a terms of service, really, with like a social media thing, right? That it's like, well, they're not going to outright say what and what isn't a transgression of this law that comes into effect so that they can just, on a case-by-case issue, determine and judge, you know, well, oh, that's hate. You're the wrong person. So if you go walk around with a Mjolnir with a Thor's hammer on you, we'll criminally charge you and put you in the slammer. You know, it's like, because you have the wrong opinions when you wore this thing or something, right?
And that's more dangerous than a hard and fast rule, right? A hard and fast, like you cross this barrier, you go to jail. When it's like, well, if you cross this barrier, we decide if you go to jail or we decide if we're going to criminally prosecute you. That's actually more dangerous because it leaves a person unsure of if he's about to get, you know, am I allowed to do this or am I not? When you're not sure of the law, it's a lot easier to break it, right? Because you don't know if you're going to fall into that category. And like I say, I don't know of a legal definition of far right. I haven't seen one explained to me in any way that makes any sense anyway. Like I say, it varies from person to person. I could ask 100 people, what's far right? And some people on the hard left, like I say, would say a mainstream conservative is extreme right wing.
Yeah.
So are they allowed to use it? Are they not allowed to use it? Well, they don't know. So any downplay of this is dangerous, actually, because when they take it from one, they can take it from all, because they just, if they say this label makes you not allowed to use it, then they can apply that label to whoever they want, whenever they want.
And again, I mean, we know that they shifted the the needle so far to the left. People have just simply remained in their political views and opinions for,
yes,
I don't know, a decade, 15 years, maybe two decades. They are essentially considered far right now, because right now because they haven't shifted, you know, with the rest of the of the culture. I mean, again, it's we're really talking about an upper echelon of just elitists, you know, globalists really that have, you know, pushed this, you know, media and kind of the cultural snobs and stuff like that.
Yes.
But most normal people would just be, if they just remained, would be considered extremists. So this is very dangerous because it shifts, and then now you're starting to criminalize behavior, which, again, was normal just a decade or so ago.
And it also allows people to compromise. Many of the heathen groups that I've seen come out trying to downplay this are like, no, we want to distance ourselves from these far-right groups. So they should be banned from using it so we can use it safely.
But no.
It becomes a compromise, and everything we do then becomes a compromise of, I mean, I think I mentioned on last show, I'm not sure, but with Abu Hamza, in the end, they get you begging for the laws that will lock you up. So now these heathen groups, they really want the bad guys or the supposed bad guys to be put, not able to use it. So they would even be asking the government, please ban these from using it so we don't get associated with it. So
yeah.
The media hypes up an image, anybody wearing this is bad. They go, no, we're not bad. They're bad. Ban them so we can use it. And then you start playing laws that that get used against you. Sorry. Just like I said with Abu Hamza, he was going out there, say British people should die, blah, 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 all this crap. It was the right wing that said, no, hate speech. We need hate speech laws. Now who are the hate speech laws being used on?
Exactly.
And it's the same with these heathen groups. They just get banned from using it.
Yeah, it simply just means that eventually, if they remain in their position, things will have shifted so far that they will... It doesn't matter if they clamor and like crawl... You know, to beg these authoritarians for forgiveness or, what do I need to do just as long as I obey, you know, kind of thing. And it's like no ground to stand on. Either we stand together united against these kinds of things, or we fall, you know, separate, because there's no one going to be there to defend us at the end of the day. And again, I would extend this invitation to, you know, I always say to our pagan brothers and sisters, I always say, help our Christian brothers and sisters. And I tell Christian brothers and sisters, help our pagan brothers and sisters. Yeah. And it's we share a common heritage here, our pagan Christian heritage. And if you allow them to attack one, they'll come for the other and they come for the next one. I think we have to have a message of unity. And if nothing else, at the very least, for the sake of free speech, and allowing people freedom of religion and do whatever they want to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm no fan of Christianity, but I don't hate Christians. Blood before anything, and they're my people. So
exactly, and that's a line that I wrote. I said, I think we have to be smart. We have to be smart, and we have to be smarter than the people who are trying to divide us. They find wedge issues, and they drive this in to make us weaker. It's divide and conquer in that sense. And we know that the globalists are trying to divide us along any little minute point of identity that they can. So
and
don't
bring
be so
division in. Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, they're trying to they divide us with immigration. They divide us with veganism versus carnivore, Christian versus pagan versus atheist. Anything that they can do, really. And the globalists have been very smart in terms of this tactic. So we have to be smarter than that. We have to think bigger. And essentially, those people who are not anti-European should just see that as the highest priority first, and then we can understand that there's different denominations and different religions and different things that we're going to kind of filter into different categories. But we do have one thing united, and that's, as you said, we have our blood in common, you know?
Yeah, I mean, divide and conquer has been a very successful tactic. Like I say, we're having artificial divisions brought in now through immigration. If all of the native English stand up now, there's lots of non-native English to be divided against them. So you end up with divide and conquer is it is what it says on the tin, you know, divide and conquer. I mean, it's been but just to go back there to 1 second to a point that you made about, you know, if we back down and try to play, you know, play submissive to them, that they'll back off. Well, nature tells you the opposite, really. If you play submissive one, there's two things that could happen. One is that you forever become the dominated, right?
Yes.
If you're playing submissive, you're dominated. And if you're a predator, say prey, it's a lying down, a gazelle lying down in front of a lion is not going to inspire mercy, only savagery. When I look to nature, anything that backs down gets predators chase what runs. Yeah. So if you start backing away, if you start turning your back, saying, I don't want to play, and you run, they'll chase you. And this is the same with the media. How many times have you seen somebody back down from a position only for the media to go at them harder and demand even more, like demand their resignation, demand everything from them, whether it be a politician or a sports celebrity or whatever. As soon as they back down from their position, the opposition goes at them harder. Not, when somebody stands up and says, you know what, I don't care. I think there was a case of Italian MP that said something about Africans, and they tried to go after him, and he basically doubled down on it, and they just left him alone because they realized that they weren't going to get anywhere with him, so they leave it away. They want you to back down. I mean, it's almost a perversion, right? It's that sickness of like when somebody's playing weak, that the bully wants to attack more, and they're trying to bully us off.
They smell blood. There's blood in the water, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's funny too, though, because they come with this kind of benevolent outlook on things. Right? Well, we're going to help everyone and tolerance and like no, they go for the jugular, they go for the kill if they sense it. And you know, people have said this even about as a low tier group as SJWs, for example, like never back down, never apologize, and stand your ground. And it's been remarkable to see. And it's the same, really, when people are banned or they're banned from services and stuff like that, that there's a division there, too. People think, well, I can't defend that person because they are you know, a little bit worse than me, or they are bad or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And one by one, we're essentially picked off, and it immediately goes into these little small cliques of people that, oh, here's the alt-light. They're obviously defending, you know, their little clique or whatever. But they don't stand up for anything, anyone who's, you know, full on like a nationalist or alt-right or something like that, for example.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Well, with the arguments of who gets where and who's the best ideology or who's got the best ideas, I say to everybody, prove it. Debating endlessly on some forum where there's just a few of you looking, that's not going to solve anything. Go out into the real world and prove to me that your ideology is best. Prove to me that you can win over the people, because make no mistake, if we do not get the people with us, we're doomed. We have to present our image, like I say, a historic image. We are an ethnic group. So if we want to remove, you know, if each ethnic group, like the English are an ethnic group, the Irish are an ethnic group, the Swedes are an ethnic group, we can defend on that basis alone. I mean, ethnic groups are defended by the UN laws of genocide, right? Ethnic groups can be, religious groups and ethnic groups can be destroyed. And we are, by any definition, going an ethnic group. So I say to anybody that says their ideology is best, show me. Yeah, prove it. Prove it is best. I think we can get caught up in a lot of the finer points of our perfect ideal world, but we're not making any strides at the moment in the actual world. In fact, since I've been involved with any kind of activism or any kind of work like this, we've only gone backwards, to be honest. Now we're having to defend a rune. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
It's not getting better. It's getting worse.
Exactly. It certainly is. And it's just so absurd when you look at it at face value. And again, this idea then that, well, it belongs to, the reason is because it's a group that we don't care, or we think they're bad, right? The Nordic Resistance Movement. So therefore we won't stand up for them and say anything. And it's just like, it's just a losing strategy, and it's just not going to work. And you're not going to be saved by that. You're not going to make it out of that situation just because you know, they tell you to jump and you just ask how high. That's just not how it works in the real world. So,
well, like you said with the symbol, you're the next group along. So once they've decided that group's bad and they ban that group, you're the next group they're coming for.
Of course.
Whether you pander to them, as we discussed anyway, whether you pander to them or not. And so we've got to take a strong stance in anything like this and say, and also take a stance like with this, in my article, I mainly focused on the heathen issue, because there's a lot of folkish heathens. I myself am one. This is the idea that I believe that my religion is attached to my blood. This is historical precedence with ancestral worship, etc. Somebody from Africa, as much as they may want to be part of my religion, they cannot be because they don't have the same ancestors as me. And part of my ritual is around worshipping my ancestors. Now, heathen groups like that, like me, or people like me that believe in this type of heathenism, well, we directly are in danger of something like this. If I was in Sweden, because they could easily deem me as far right for having a racial aspect to my belief system, even though it is has historical context. Regardless of my political opinions, they go, well, you've got a racial aspect, so we're going to stop it. And then it really does infringe on religious freedoms, because most of the groups that I have seen called far right in heathen groups are anybody that has any type of folkish element to them. And then either they pander to them, like we said earlier, oh, no, we're not, we include everybody. So then they have to either change themselves to include everybody, or they literally get deemed a hate group. They don't show any mercy with this. And as soon as they show, so I think we need to have a strong message that, you know, I'm a racial heathen. I believe that my religion is directly related to my ancestral home and my ancestors. Like I say, my nation, you know, people go, oh, flags, that's all secondary. My nation is my ancestral blood. That's what I consider a nation. That's been really the definition of a nation. Nation comes out of natal, to be born of. And it's not just born of the land, it's born of the people, you know. Although when English people went to America, when I lived in America briefly, people would tell me of their English heritage or their Irish heritage or their German heritage. So they were always, you know, I'm American, but I'm English or German or whatever, because that's important to them. Identity is important. If you erase somebody's identity, they become like a leaf that's left its tree. They just blow around aimlessly till they turn to dust. And that's the same thing that will happen to us as a people if our history is demonized and we're not allowed to freely explore it show it.
And this is, of course, the clue to why they're doing what they're doing. And also the clue that they're only attacking us. In many cases, identity politics is highly revered, actually, especially on the left, obviously. But, you know, there's a lot of conservatives or some of these, cuck right-wingers that are like, that's no good or whatever. But they don't really criticize it that hard when it comes to other groups that are actually adopting it or something, you know. But we're the only ones that can't really have that level of identity and cling on to those things, especially if, as you say, the part of the religion has to do with a veneration and an acceptance that there's something special about our ancestors, and that's what ties us together with that religious belief system, basically.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, for me personally, as a personal practice, at least half, if not more, of my spiritual practice revolves around ancestor worship. That is to venerate and revere my ancestors, because they gave me life. They're the reason I am here. It's their struggles that inspire me to exist. I mean, they are my purpose. Their effort is my purpose. That is the purpose of all life, right? If we look at it, we can argue about the meaning of life and debate, and many great minds have done this, but in nature, it is to procreate. It is to keep going. I don't know what's at the end, what's at the end of this keep going, but I know that we must, because that's what everything in the planet, all life tries to do. Every tree will plant and try to dominate its area. And take away anything that is going to infringe upon it. So plants compete. There's battlegrounds all over in every forest that you know. You know, invasive species get in there and destroy the native populations. It happens at every level. And there was an article a few years ago, I believe, or maybe a year or so ago, about wolf packs and how they don't cross each other's territories. Nations are, where's the borders? People go, there's no borders in nature, right?
Yeah.
There might not be a border there, but there's a border, right? There's different groups not crossing into each other's territory for fear of reprisal.
Yeah.
Because that's their territory. And I saw you put up there the ancestor effect. And as you rightly put in your video on this runic situation. At the very end of your video, you briefly brought up the point that their demonization of this, their attack upon this, shows its power.
Yes.
And the ancestor effect is really interesting. In the article there, I talk about this study that was done in Germany and Austria, I believe, where they put people through a series of tests where they just basically thought about their ancestors for a brief amount of time. I think it was like 5 minutes. And these people did better on IQ tests. They had more self-worth and self-value. And they even did some rigorous tests with this. And so they said, is it just somebody you like? If you think about somebody you like, does that inspire you? So they did it with people that they liked or heroes or whatever, against ancestors, just friends. It didn't work. It had no effect for people thinking about just their friends. But when they thought about their ancestors again, they did better in the test.
Interesting.
They said, do you have to like your ancestors? So they thought about, they told people to think about ancestors they disliked or things about their ancestors they disliked. I remember this is Germany, so you can probably imagine what they were thinking. But,
right.
But no, still, it had a positive effect.
Wow.
And it didn't even matter, actually, if the ancestors were living or dead. Even people's grandparents, if they thought about them, it had a positive effect. And this was done a few years ago, this study, but it's in that article. And so whatever you believe, if people think it's all hocus pocus and it's all nothing, something of nothing, well, there is scientific evidence to back it up, although sadly there's not been any follow-up studies done. So there's a lot of interesting questions to ask there. And sorry, I went off on a bit of a ramble.
No, that's very, very interesting. I didn't have time to read that article yet, and that's very. I have to dig into that a bit deeper. That's very interesting. And so again, the reason why they're scared essentially is they've tried now for I don't know how long for it's in Sweden specifically. Almost 20 years, I'd say 15, 20 years to attack these aspects of it, and despite the fact that yes, of course. If you go way, way back, there was a push when Christianity came in to remove these things, and I believe that there was severe physical, you know, punishment essentially if you ended up worshiping or using some of these ancient, you know, the runes and stuff like that. But despite all of that, here's an interesting article from Science Nordic that showed that only just 100 years ago. There were isolated people still in Sweden that was using actually the runes. It was, you know, they transformed, obviously, other kind of, you know, it merged over time and they still cling on to certain aspects of it. There's even certain dialects, of course, that this article goes into specifically. Elvdalen is the place where this happened. It's kind of a more difficult area to really get into. It's kind of surrounded by mountains and forests in a particular way. So that's very interesting. It means that it was never... At least in all parts, as we, it never really altogether went away. But my point there was that, yes, they've been attacking it, and they've said this is racist if you're using this. The ADL have been putting them on their websites.
The
you know, these symbols are bad, and there's bad people using them, and therefore. So, but all despite all that shaming, despite all that kind of signaling against it, it hasn't worked. It actually continued to grow. And as we are continuing to being displaced in our own countries, people are, understandably, just like an immigrant population is when they come to foreign territory, they start clinging on harder to the tradition that they know.
Yes.
This is an understandable human psychological effect. It's not really, you know, some people call it the freezing effect, but they essentially become kind of, not that that's a bad thing, that they get hardened and kind of locked down, but it's a sign that they're under pressure, under threat, essentially.
Yes,
so this is the same thing that's happened in Scandinavia. And despite this, you know, we have resurgence in mythology, in movies, in historical research, in all these things that people are – because they want this, right? So now I think that that's the only recourse that they believe that they have is to simply make it illegal, I guess, once again, we should say, to ensure that no one can use certain symbols and stuff like that. So that shows you just how far they're willing to go. And also how scared they are of the power of these things and that they're trying to stop it in their tracks, in its tracks before it goes too far and before it consumes the mass of the population, I'd say.
Well, the problem is, like, especially for Sweden, the runes are a very important part of Swedish history. It's its first literary writing. the runic stone in a rock, is it? The rock runic stone? I don't know how to pronounce it properly, but that's the first evidence of writing in Scandinavia, in Sweden. I mean, that is a profound, it's profound in the fact that it is the first writing found in Sweden. So to decide that you're going to ban an element of your, such an integral part of your history, it is madness. I mean, on any level. And not only that, they want to belittle it too. In that article about the jumpers, right, where we got the great quote from the knitter, they also, there's another quote that I'd like to mention where they put, they say, there is little evidence that the rune originally had any symbolic significance beyond its sound value. But the letter shares the name of a Norse deity popularly understood as the god of war, Tyr. Nowadays, most runologists consider it a letter no more mysterious than the letter T. So not only are they trying to ban it, they're trying to play it down. It's just nothing. It's just a letter, which actually makes their other claims even sillier, right, to ban it. But regardless of it making their other claims to try and ban it more silly, it's an attack on it on all fronts. If we can't ban it, we're going to play it down. It's just a letter. It's nothing. When every single pagan group I've been associated with or talked to, or every single heathen that I've known, Northern European heathen that is, holds great significance in the runes. Me, myself, as well. I've spent months just looking at one rune, just looking at it from all angles to try and understand it. And there's a great wealth of knowledge in every runic symbol if one wishes to take the time to use it. But again, we see the playing down of it, the reduction of it in some way. And it's just to reduce us because they fear it's, as you mentioned, this is a battleground, and their prize is to cut us from our roots. Our prize is to feed our roots, grow them stronger. And they know that if we make our roots stronger, if we celebrate our heritage, start seeing how our ancestors saw in the past, believing what our ancestors believed, then we will grow stronger as a people and we'll be harder to break down into a multicultural, multiracial society, because it's not multicultural. It's all Starbucks culture at the end of the day. This is what we see now with in England. We have a big thing, Muslims and this. Now, I don't want anybody from the Middle East here, but it's not Islam that is necessarily the problem. Now, Islam's got a lot of problems, don't get me wrong. But the battle is not against Islam and the natural population. The battle is against immigration and the natural population, whether they're Shinto or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's that's what's going to dilute the blood, but they want to take it off into a clash of cultures, right? So this is multiculturalism. We're a nation can only have one culture, you know, and what the culture that they want for all of these people, regardless of what their culture is at the moment, is a Starbucks, McDonald's, you know, eat burgers and sit in front of your TV watching sports, you know. That's about it.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And it shows, of course, the weakness, how insecure they are in their position. The fact that a few, and I'm not trying to belittle it either at the same time, but the reality is that, you know, we're talking about very organized, well-financed systems or you know, groups essentially, right, on the world stage that are lobbying and are complaining and are worrying about the rise of nationalist sentiments all over the Western world, all over Europe and where the European diaspora exists. And I have to bring up as well this article because there was pressure. The reason why the Prime Minister, I think, issued Björn Rosengren, sorry, I forget his, it's not very memorable, I guess. I forget his last name, the guy who's heading up this investigation now. Was this World Jewish Congress article and consequent video that they released as well, basically urging Sweden to ban the Nordic resistance movement. And then as a consequent outcrop of that was like, okay, let's look into what symbols are used so that other people that use that in that same context can also kind of be targeted, right? So yeah. It says quite a bit, I think, about the current the zone of struggle right now too between globalist forces and nationalist forces, right? That this is at the forefront. It's ideology, it's tradition, it's heritage, religion, and they are effectively just trying to say, just impose laws to ban it all and it will go away. Or I don't know what they're hoping for, really, but obviously, even if they ban a symbol, these ideas and these sentiments are not going to go away. They're actually, in fact, just going to grow stronger in light of this kind of opposition.
Yeah, and I hope they do. I mean, but we've just got to be careful where we lead it. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me that the World Jewish Congress, I mean, in that article I talked about the sweaters, we get this quote. Her stance was supported. Now, her stance, the her in question is Miss Finseth, who was the knitter. Her stance was supported by Terji Embeland. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. A senior researcher at the Holocaust Center in Oslo and an expert on the history of religion, apparently, who said that neo-Nazis today were trying to occupy Viking symbols just as Norwegian National Socialist and Nazi Germany did in the 1930s and 1940s.
So the solution is to ban it then. Right. That makes sense.
Well, yeah.
Even from their perspective, that makes no sense whatsoever.
I know. That's what I mean. They talk on both. They make no sense because they just want to demonize it, plot it, so people just stop using it. Start to feel shame in their own heritage. So if you stand up and you go, I like the Vikings, or I like runes, or I like the Anglo-Saxons, or these people, you immediately go, oh, well, that's a bit right-wing, that kind of thinking, right? You've got a Thor's hammer on. You must be one of those extremists. You're a right-wing terrorist, right? Because you're wearing a Thor's hammer. Because because of the mass pressure by media, which is false, it's a lie. If you go on the streets, the Brexit vote, although it's not really going to achieve much, showed that in the UK, right? Everybody pretty much wants to leave Brexit, but the media tells you that no, more people don't want to leave it. We need another referendum, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on. But even though it's not true, the media propagate a lie, and then people go, you know what, I won't risk that. I'll just take my Thor's hammer off because I've got a meeting. If I wear this in the meeting, and it starts there. We start to self-censor. We start to censor not only what we wear, but our thoughts, et cetera, till we self-censored ourselves into silence. And also fear, with a law, well, maybe I'll get arrested because I did attend that group, and that group might be, somebody that might have attended. I mean, like I say, it's impractical. I don't think too much will come from it, but it is, again, just part and parcel of this demonization of our culture, which is cultural genocide. And cultural genocide is genocide because, like I say, a people cut from its roots have no future. They're just aimless. They cannot, me and you, because of our Northern European roots, we can join together and protect something. If we don't have those roots, then what are we going to join together over? We join together over nonsense ideas. This is why you see these overreactions in the media about, some celebrity did an oopsie, right? And everybody's divided and chatting because they've got nothing to ground them or nothing to pull them together. So they just talk nonsense all day.
Yeah, absolutely. I had an article up here. Let me pull that back up here. Medieval scholars joust with white nationalists and one another. Another New York Times piece, pretty interesting, talking about how what they consider to be bad people are using symbols from the Middle Ages. And of course, it was also in the same thing, kind of belittling it. It was saying, well, they're not using it right, or historically, this was inaccurate. Like, that's not what it's about. That's not all it's about. It's about the fact that people, they feel and this is the basis of every religion out there. It's to go step outside of yourself in a way. It's a selfless act to have this viewpoint, essentially, where you think about something which is grander and bigger than yourself. You realize that something is beyond you. You might have aid, or you could have help if you have essentially many of them, the Abrahamic belief thinks that. If you have God on your side, the chances are you're going to be more successful in what you're doing, whatever that is. If that's battle, if that's, anything, if you have that sense of something, a power above yourself, you're not going to be limited by yourself. Even if it's real or not, that's just how it works, right?
Well, belief, you believe you will, or you believe you can, or you believe you can't. you're probably right, is a valid saying for many reasons, because if you haven't got self-belief, you would not achieve anything. So it has an effect reality, even if, you know, we can't prove it. But but I mean, look at the title there, white nationalists, and they're automatically bad people in the article, right? The white nationalists. Well, what about black nationalists? What about African nationalists? Well, they're not bad people. I mean, and this goes back, I mean, in the 60s or 70s when Muhammad Ali is being interviewed in the UK on a big interview program there, and he talks about the birds and the bees, you know, the birds, different coloured birds, and how they shouldn't mix. He's debated with nicely, oh, I think you're wrong. If a white person had said that, even then, they'd have gone, you're a racist. But they debate with him because it's a popular movement between Africans. There's a lot of Africans that don't want to mix with other races, and nobody attacks them. Because they're allowed to do it, and they're not bad people. If I've got a marching band, of African marching band going from my street, so look at them, so proud of their history, so colourful, you hear all these things. Colourful, all their food's great. There, but suddenly they're a distinction from us. But then I go, yeah, they're different to us. I'm white and that's not my culture. Oh, you're a racist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They're different, and that's why you enjoy their music band, right? And if I go to another country, I enjoy experiencing that country. I enjoy the culture of that country, but I don't want to live there. I want to come home to my culture.
Yeah.
I don't want my home to be the rest of the world's culture. And worse still, that my culture is demonized. So I'm not even allowed, if I put a tear rune on and have the wrong opinion, I could go to jail. I mean, that's just absurd.
It is absurd. And I think as well, speaking of this, let me just pull up the Genocide Convention here once more.
Yes.
And actually look at that, because I do believe that they mention culture by word, I almost said in there. Let me just see here. Let me pull that up. I'm switching the sources real quick. But yeah, here it is. Killing members of the group, causing serious bodily, and this is the interesting part here, right? B, the definition of genocide, again, for those who don't know what I'm talking about here, the convention. It says in Article 2, B, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group or forcibly transferring men. But much of that has to do with an actual, not a physical, like, direct way of murdering or harming someone. It actually has to do with the mental state or creating conditions which is leading the group to essentially hating themselves, and therefore you're going to have preventing births within the group, right? All of these things can actually be weaved into it. I thought there was something about culture, but it isn't. But in an indirect way, it is actually about the culture too, that if you attack these things, if you create conditions which effectively causes you to feel rootless or even lowers your self-esteem to a certain extent, collectively speaking or individually, then those are all issues which are going to lead you to be in a lessened state than if you would have been left alone, essentially.
Of course. I mean, there's several there that we could, I mean, deliberately inflicting a group of conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or part. I mean, immigration is that.
Yes.
In part. And remember, ethnicity is cited. I mean, at the beginning of that, means any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group.
Religious group, exactly. And there we go. That's right in the smack in the middle of what we're talking about right here. So, yeah.
I mean, and it's racial, but it's ethnic as well. I mean, I'm an ethnic English. People try to say, we are ethnic groups by any definition, like I said earlier. So, anything, immigration is to destroy us. Multiculturalism is to destroy us, in part at least. That cannot be argued. Therefore, it is a step towards genocide. Now, people might go, you know, you're crazy, and they start to say you've got a tinfoil hat on with this type of stuff. But, you know, say this experiment, this multicultural experiment doesn't work, or even if it does, right? If somebody from another country decides that they've had enough of it, they can always go home. If I decide I've had enough of it, I can't go home because the experiment is my home and the guinea pigs are my people. And even if it all works out beautifully, at the end of it, my people disappear as they are.
Yeah.
And that's the same as anybody else. And this cultural erosion is part of that, because you cannot be pro destruction of your own people unless you don't value your own people.
Yeah, and if you don't know what you're missing, you know, if you don't know what you're losing, then why are you going to protect it or try to save it?
Exactly, and that's why I believe, and that's why we do, that's why I work with Mimers, we work as a Mimersbrunner, is to try and promote this pride in our history. Sometimes I'm accused of being too focused on Northern European, but I'm Northern European, and sadly, that's where my passion comes for my specific people. That does not mean that I hate any other Europeans, far from it. I think Europe needs to unite at the moment, but we only need to, we can unite by respecting each other's boundaries at the same time. I don't see, I'd love to see Southern Europeans make their own equivalent to Mimersbrunner, and Eastern Europeans, and make some beautiful videos that I could enjoy of theirs, because they would be able to speak with that from a passion as I can.
Yeah, I know there's one guy, I think it's just called Slavic World. I don't even know if they're active anymore on YouTube, but they did some great videos like that. Wonderful.
Yeah,
things, you know, and many overlaps and many similarities. There are many differences too, but you know, there are definitely cultural overlaps. You know, a shared common heritage there. So
with the Slavic peoples, there's lots. I mean, they've got some beautiful pagan groups out over there. I forget their names at the moment, and I probably wouldn't be able to pronounce them well if I could. But there's some really big organizations over there. There's some really beautiful pagan ceremony and things. I've seen a few videos of theirs. I mean, I'm not in contact with any of them, but it's really seems to be coming alive over there in Eastern Europe, the pagan beliefs. Sadly, in the UK and places like that, why is there under the current? There's a lot of fear because of legislation like this of coming out openly. Because as soon as you say, like I said earlier, bring up that folkish element, you are immediately demonized. They've got no interest in what you've got to say. There's no defense, right? You're just a racist, bigoted, neo-Nazi, whatever, you know, the list goes on. Now, somebody like myself, I don't care what they call me. I'm not fussed. I know what I am. So, and I understand the importance of saying what I am proudly and making no compromise in that. But, for some people, it's too much. And for some people, there's a risk of losing their job. I mean, as we said earlier, they will come after you if you back down. And especially in America, like we mentioned on the last show a little bit, they come after you hard and they get you sacked. You know, unable to pay your bills and on the street if they could get their way. You know, they will come after you hard. But.
Exactly. And of course, you know, and that's why it's important that we all stand up for each other and help each other out and, you know, accept that kind of wide range that we have. And, you know, there's been just historically as well, of course, has been defense and strategic alliances, and they don't last forever either, but they come together at the right time to defend a common, you know, goal.
Yes, confederations in ancient times.
Of course, exactly. That's just what it is, and it doesn't mean that it has to stand forever, or for that matter, that it can't last beyond the conflict later on, or something like that. That's what it is too. But you know, again, it's just. This ban is just so absurd. It's so...
Yes, it is.
And I wanted to actually bring up this article, too. You listed this one as well to show just, you know... And I've covered many of these over the years as they've happened, both the melting down of... And again, this was not the, you know, most impressive archaeological find, but it was the point that matters, that it was a prize on preserving this amulet from the Iron Age, Viking Age. And the decision was made, no, we're not going to spend money on that. We'll melt it down and just throw it on the garbage heap, effectively. That they chose that for utilitarian purposes. And then they spent so much other money on, like, resources outside of their own people. But anyway, go ahead and comment on this article.
Yeah, just to put it into context, I mean, it's actually the Iron Age. It's the time of the Kimbri we're talking about, Scandinavian Iron Age. Time of the Kimbri, people like that, these are the artifacts that people like that would have been familiar with. So it's an immensely important period in history. And I understand the problems that we're getting with story because we're finding so much now. But you could have at least offered it. And it would be more financially viable to offer it to collectors who are going to buy this and cherish things, you know, keep these in their own private collections. I mean, what better way to preserve something, they give their heritage back to the people for a small price, right?
Yeah.
If you can't store it, I'd love to buy some of this stuff. You know, I'd love it. I'd love it, and I'm sure there are many people in Sweden that would love to buy some Swedish, genuine Swedish Iron Age artifacts.
Oh, you're kidding. Exactly. I mean, we've been so doing so well economically, and we even know that from the tourist stuff. There's actually a lot of people from around the world that come and they want to see, you know, they want to see Viking lore. They want to go to Scandinavian countries and see that, you know. And there's
some melting it down.
Yeah, I mean, there's some resurgence of that kind of stuff, but this is just absurd. And another thing we covered as well was the Muslim Viking angle. You remember this too? I made a video about it where. They're stretching so far and so hard to try to make a connection that, well, immigration has always kind of happened. The Muslim and the Vikings were, in fact, very tight-knit. And, yes, there was trade, but this textile that they're trying to point out actually said Allah was just a big farce. It was the Uppsala University, Annika Larsson, as you see in the animation playing for the podcast audience here. She was the one who basically had a political motive from Uppsala University to try to tie these two cultures together. Again, in an attempt at justifying, essentially, we know this, mass migration and open borders. Yeah.
Yes, they've always been here, right? They've look, it's even written. But I mean, there was another thing actually. I wish I'd found the clip for you before. But it was part of a BBC documentary where he's actually looking at the beautiful carvings on the wooden churches in Norway. What are they called? The stave churches.
Stavkirke, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
The beautiful carvings on there. Yeah. And there's one, and it's kind of a phallic symbol, but anyway, but then he looks at it and he goes, look, doesn't this remind you of anything? Islam? So he's trying, the BBC is trying to claim those as, they must have been mosques. I don't know. I mean,
I do think I know what you're talking about. It was one of the series that the BBC did on the Viking Age, right? Yeah. And it's just like, here is proof that they were in the trade routes. They were down in Persia or something somewhere. And he was looking at, that's right, the animal, the snake that are, wringling or whatever you call it. But yeah, it's true. It's true. It's this constant justification that, well, you don't really have something that's your own or unique. And again, that's just done to make us sever those ties and say, it's all the same thing anyway. So we might as well let it go, right?
Yeah, let's let Islam in. Let's let any foreign religion, because it's always been there.
Yeah.
And we're not indigenous. I mean, you type in indigenous Europeans, you don't get much on that. We're not indigenous. They won't allow us to say, if we say indigenous, if you say you're an indigenous Englishman or indigenous Swede, I guarantee you the left will call you racist. Just for stating a fact. Whereas if you said, oh, they're indigenous to, if you say this about Amerindians, which there's evidence with the Salterian man, that he may not have been the first guy there, right? But if you say Amerindians are indigenous Native Americans, as they like to call them, that's fine, right? But if you say, I mean, this is another thing, right? About protecting heritage and protecting identity. The people that call me, that would call me a racist wanting to protect my heritage and identity, do they call Palestinians racist? Do they call Amerindians racist? Do they call the Tibetans racist? No, they don't. They support those groups, but they won't support Europeans. I mean, we cannot emphasize this distinction enough, because more people need to understand that it's complete batshit crazy. And it's one rule for one and another for another. And until we get some kind of fair playing field, we've got to keep repeating the message. Like you said at the beginning of the show, we've got to keep telling people. We've got to engage with people at every opportunity, at a bus stop, in a shopping mall, at a bar, wherever. We've got to engage them. So if they say something, engage them. With a logical argument, you don't have to get aggressive. You don't have to flare up. Just beat them with logic, because logic's on our side. Our idea of nationality, our idea or definition of a nation, has been the standard since the beginning of man. Even wolves obey it. Right? Wolves and lions obey this same standard of nation, of this idea of a boundary.
And if you don't do it, talking to you guys out there watching this, listening to this, if you don't do this, if you don't engage, if you don't talk, and again, there's smart ways of doing this. You don't have to, you need to fight with people about it. Just be smart and bring things up, or at the convenient time, or people at work or something. And I'm sure many people are trying that and they might be dismissed or whatever, but don't give up and keep trying. And we have to do something about this. We who have the knowledge about what's going on have an obligation to awaken mm-hmm. our brothers and sisters to what it is that's happening, because they are ultimately suffering from this as much as we are. They, in some regards, they just don't even know about it, or they're so ethnomasochistic that they think it's morally right to shoot themselves essentially in the foot in the future for their own children. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I can see what you brought up now. Yeah, they're indoctrinated, which makes me extreme right wing, according to that.
I wanted to bring this up too, because it's a similar thing happening in the UK. Obviously, we share a lot in common in that sense, in terms of how insane our governments are. But what did you think of this? You had looked at the indicators and warnings from the UK Army of how to detect an extreme right winger.
Yeah, I mean, this is within the army, I'm assuming. So, but I mean, the best one for me is the first one. Describe themselves as a patriot. So you've got a man a man or a woman that's joined the army, and describes themselves as patriotic is a sign that they could be far extreme right wing. Sorry, they use a more,
XRW, I guess.
Yeah, that's XRW. There you go.
The new cryptocurrency. Oh, anyway.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, what we just said there, that people might be indoctrinated, right? That's an example. So they're just taking these buzzwords. But I mean, it's scary. And this is why people, what we just said about engaging people, this is why people aren't engaging, because they're scared of this. They're scared. I mean, to describe yourself as patriotic in the army, I mean, how many people join the army, join it because they have some sense of patriotism? I mean, it's ridiculous.
People should go through this one. It's hilarious. Refer to individuals ready to change their right-wing views as being indoctrinated. Refer to political correctness as some left-wing or communist plot. Use blatantly untruthful or incorrect references to immigrants, Judaism, or Islam.
Who's deciding that they're truthful? I mean, again, it's just all ambiguous. It doesn't. None of this. Yeah, to say if you say Londonistan or.
Islamo fascism. Yeah, so make generalizations about Muslims and Jews, make inaccurate generalizations about the left or government. That's interesting.
I mean, who's going to decide that they're inaccurate? I mean, so this is up to the person that's observing it to decide if they made an inaccurate observation about the left or Muslims or Jews. Well, how does the person observing know? Are they an expert in the left and the right and Jews? Muslims and Jews? This is the problem we're getting. This brings us back to one of the points about the runes as well. This ambiguousness about everything. You don't know if you're breaking the law. Am I breaking the military law? Am I going to be considered as an extreme right wing by the military? Because this is all very ambiguous text. And I think that's part of the key with these laws, is keeping it ambiguous, keeping people unsure, because then you self-censor. You go, I don't know if I can or I can't. So I err on the side of caution, I won't. Yeah. So this is what's stopping people from going out there engaging, because somebody listening might be in the army and they might go, well, yeah, if I go out there and start talking like this, I could get reported to one of my officers for being extreme right wing. And that could have serious implications, not only on my career, but, but on my livelihood. You know, what am I going to do? Somebody might want to stay as a career in the military, and then, they lose that. And like I say, when you threaten people with losing their jobs, it's not illegal, but the person's got a mortgage, they got children, they could go down a very rapid scale of poverty real fast.
Well, and that's what they're obviously trying to keep people afraid of, and say, you better keep in line, don't protest and don't say anything, don't stand out, because we'll knock you down a couple of pegs right away. In fact, we could just destroy your life. And that kind of pressure is constantly there, where people are like, well, I can't say anything, because what if, my issues? But it's like, well, I get it, but it's like, you're also risking the future of your children and your grandchildren and everyone to come for this mm-hmm. issue that it's about your, and I know it's not just a convenience or your comfort or whatever. That is more than that. You do have an obligation to obviously protect your and take care of your family.
But the
fact is, If no one takes that risk, no one will ever speak out, and we'll be always in complete servitude to whatever the government asks of us to do. You know, government is supposed to be a representative of the people. It's not supposed to be an enforcer of unjust laws and rules, which we haven't approved,
we definitely haven't improved. And it goes back when I was talking about the philosophical point of life or whatever, but like I said, I don't know what that is, but like what I can say is that nature decides that we must preserve, we must continue. And throughout our history as Europeans as a whole, we have given our lives to wars and battles, for the betterment of our people as a whole. It doesn't matter what the war was over. In World War II, World War I, and any of the historic wars, the wars between the Romans and the Gauls, the wars between the Greeks and the Gauls, every single group there was fighting for its people, right? So the people dying were dying to help their people exist in the future. They lost everything, essentially. You know, the people that died in World War II on both sides lost everything in what they believed, rightly or wrongly, on either side, in the defense of their people. They died for that ideal. It's not extreme to want to fight for something that you believe in. In fact, it's the only way that the governments get anybody in the military. If you join the military, you know that you are at risk of being shot at because you're probably going to be shooting at people. And you do that because you believe in something more, I would assume. You believe in something bigger than yourself that you're willing to lay down your life for. And that's the standard of history. So if we can't, if we're too scared to even speak up, then I think that shows us how far we've come as well, how far we've been demoralized, had our history and roots taken away from us. And I'm not attacking people for this because it's a big step to go, you know what, I've got a family and I'm living comfortably. And if I start talking like this, I might lose all of that. I understand, like you said, there's a personal obligation, but life must, our people must continue. And for that, people have got to step forward, and there has to be an element of risk involved in all of it. I mean, sadly, because otherwise we'll let them take the tear room, then nobody will wear it. We'll let them take the next thing, like they've already done with the swastika. People are scared to use it. And we'll just let them take everything till we're nothing.
Yep, it's true.
Because we won't be able to stop it.
I know, it's true. We have to put a stop to it. We have to take our responsibility to push back and fight back. And I wish that people who even believe differently politically would understand where this is going, and at least if they were principled about authoritarian governments if they wouldn't have been pro a ban on the burqa or something like that, or the niqab or some other religious symbol, then they should stand up and be on our side in this case. I doubt they will. They just see this as beneficial to their agenda, unfortunately. But you know, that's the situation we're at. What else would you like to add to this discussion here before we let you go, Phil? It was great having you here and just detailing this and getting yet another layer of analysis and points on this issue as well. But what else should we cover?
No. If we're about done here, I mean, I'd just like to reemphasize the point I made towards the beginning that, you know, without our history, we are nothing. We are just aimlessly floating around with no context. We randomly got born with no context. Our history is what makes us. The people, like I said, in my own spiritual beliefs, that fought and died for my existence are important to me. And that blood is my nation. That is what my nation is. It's not a flag. It's not even a landmass, although my nation is attached to a landmass because we've been here for so long. And we have a right to that landmass, because is anybody else going to let us in? I don't think so, if we get kicked out. I mean, look at South Africa as an example of that. They cannot claim asylum in many European countries, even though they are definitely under a level of genocide, right? So, yeah, just remember that without our history, we're nothing. And any attack on this, whether you believe it will result in a law or not, it is a further demonization of our heritage and our history. And if it continues, our children are going to grow up fearful to use any of these things, fearful to even look at our history, for fear that, oh, you're reading about Vikings, you must be a far-right extremist, and, you know, we're going to lock you in a gulag. Yeah?
Yeah, I know. It's just so bizarre, these times. It's just unreal when you think about it, the way that people are treated for thinking differently and having different views, and the way that they can just smear and demonize and almost indiscriminately in the media destroy people's reputation for
Yes.
Not doing anything. They're trying to point out people that are like terrorists or criminals for thinking differently, for having a different view, for not being... it's amazing. It's amazing times.
Show, how many times does somebody like yourself have to put in a disclaimer? We're not saying real violent revolution, just because we know that if we say the wrong word, right? If we utter a sentence that's slightly phrased wrong, we could get a knock at the door, right? Because they say, you incited something because you phrased something in the wrong way. I mean, we even have to be careful of how we say things. I mean, when we get to this point, it's time to start kicking back. It's time to start speaking without fear. But they've put us in this position. Unless enough of us gather to speak up, then they'll get their way with the tear room. Yeah. They'll get their way because nobody will want to speak up in defense of the Nordic resistance movement, because then they'll go, well, if I speak up in defense of them, they'll say I'm one. Even though you could just speak up with them on their rights to, as a Swedish man, to express his own Swedish heritage proudly without fear of persecution. But people won't stand up for it because, like I say, they get scared over them. They think I'm in the Nordic resistance movement or Nordic front, et cetera, et cetera. So,
well, this is the battle. This is the front line of the battle right here, right now. I mean, there's many, mm-hmm. many fronts, obviously, but this is one of them in terms of the attempt at destroying our religious and cultural heritage. And as we know, soon then they go for the next religion when they're done with that. You know, it's backwards. We need to censor the Bible, and you know, it's everything is up for grabs at that point, really. You know, so. You know, either we fight back now, or we just lay down and fart, and that's it. You know, it's what else is left kind of thing. It's
we either stand up, or we just go back to playing computer games and watching TV. You know, if you're not going to stand up, then there's no point being here really at all.
What kind of life is that? Of just like crawling on your knees. And again, you might not, because you simply don't care. But the point is, eventually it will strike something that you do care about, and at that point it's just you're going to be so weak and unable to put up any opposition that you'll just be devoured by those who are seeking to displace us and replace us, you know.
Mm-hmm. If the gazelle doesn't care about the lion, that's just easier for the lion, right?
That's true. That is true. It's nature after all, folks. Whether we like that or not, we're living inside of the system of nature, and it's finding different ways of attack and different predators arise to attack us. It's an intra species kind of predatory system right now. But you know, so what? That's what it is. Hey, let's plug some of your stuff here, Phil, at the end before we wrap up, and let people know how they can follow your work, check out your videos, and whatever else you want to mention here at the end.
We're on Facebook and Twitter. We have a website up, which I'm sure. Henrik will link in the video description somewhere. If they want to support us, we have Patreon or PayPal, and you can buy shirts. They're all linked on the website. So if you have any spare cash and want to throw it our way, we're more than happy to have it. So we can we want to really up our workload over the next year. Although we will do this without financing will make it a little bit easier. But, so thanks.
Wonderful. It's great having you here again, Phil. Really appreciate it. Check out Mimiris Brunner. We'll have the links to that, to the social media as well. Check out the videos, some great videos. We did a show, in case you're new or you missed that show with Phil. We're going to details about the Kimbri and stuff like that. So it was great having you here. Phil, thank you again for returning. We'll talk more soon. Keep up the good work, okay? And thank you for the work you're doing. I really appreciate it.
And yourself, Henrik, and thanks for having me.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much again for being here today, for watching. And I want to say thank you to all our pagan and Christian and atheist, for that matter, too, brothers and sisters out there who understand what's at stake, and everyone who's not either self-hating or anti-European. We do appreciate you, and thank you so much for being there. We're going to wrap up here for this time. We'll be back with much more soon, guys. Make sure you stay tuned to redice.tv and also, of course, redicemembers.com, the best way to support us right there on the members website. We'll see you guys soon. Until then, take good care.